From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Alaska has the highest homicide rate in the nation for women killed by men for the seventh year in a row. The state has been first or second on that list for a decade. That's according to a report released Tuesday from the Violence Policy Center, a Washington, D.C. nonprofit that advocates for gun control. The report details findings from the most recent data, which is from 2020. In that year, 12 Alaska women were killed by men. More than 90% of the victims were killed by someone they knew. A quarter of them were killed with guns. The report says state lawmakers should prioritize ending the epidemic of deadly violence against Alaska women, and particularly Alaska Native women. Women in Alaska were killed by men at more than twice the average national rate. Alaska Native women were killed at 10 times the rate of white women. The Federal Office of Violence Against Women is holding its annual government-to-government tribal consultation meetings in Anchorage this week. Its aims are to figure out how to administer tribal funds to make Indigenous women safer and to strengthen the federal response to these violent crimes. A former Alaska Attorney General has been indicted by a state grand jury on three felony counts of sexual abuse of a minor. Officials say the allegations against Clyde Ed Sniffen involve an Anchorage West High School student while he was in a position of authority in 1991. Sniffen will be arraigned on Monday. Special Prosecutor Greg Olson in May filed the charges against Sniffen, and the grand jury returned its indictment of the three felonies against him earlier this week. A message sent to Jeffrey Robinson, who is listed in online court records as Sniffen's attorney, was not immediately returned. His office said he was out of town. Demand for lumber is pushing the state's Division of Forestry to pitch the sale of old-growth forest near El Capitan Passage on northern Prince of Wales Island. As KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, a regional conservation group is arguing that the 340-acre sale could come at the expense of the island's deer, fish, and even tourism.
The state's Division of Forestry is proposing the sale, which would include clear-cutting 8 million board feet of old-growth forest. That's according to the preliminary best interest statement released late last month. And the division's Southeast Area Forester, Greg Staunton, says the timber industry has been struggling since the Biden administration paused old-growth logging in the Tongass. Timber industry jobs in the region fell to their lowest level on record last year, according to a recent report.
We have operators and purchasers that have a need for timber because they're not able to fulfill their needs other ways through, like, say, the federal government.
The proposed timber sale area is near the El Capitan Passage, close to the cave site and accessible through the island's main road system. It's about 7 miles west of the city of Whale Pass. But the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council says the damage it could do outweighs the good.
You're essentially hammering an area that's been hammered already.
That was Meredith Traynor, the council's executive director. Traynor says the surrounding area has been heavily logged.
We're concerned that they're going to be logging additional old growth in this area that already has a matrix of impacts from these other entities, and that the sort of the characteristics of the sale don't really hold up to the light in terms of whether it's a reasonable thing to do at this time in that area that's already seen these impacts.
The council is also worried about potential impacts to the island's deer population. She says the council wants to discourage eating into areas that deer depend on.
And as I think anyone on Prince of Wales knows, deer habitat and the ability to harvest deer is incredibly important for community members there, and even for folks from Ketchikan who often travel to Prince of Wales to harvest deer.
And, she says, old-growth forests are important to maintaining stream quality for fish. Even though stream restoration work could help, Traynor argues that could be avoided altogether if the El Capitan sale doesn't go forward. Another problem that the council sees with the sale is its proximity to the Prince of Wales Scenic Byway. It would clear-cut growth along that road.
We have these beautiful places that they are so stunning and memorable and impactful for visitors and for residents alike that they're designated as a scenic byway. And then there's just this continued effort by the state and by other entities to clear-cut the land right along the byway.
The council suggests that a better alternative would be to log the area in smaller chunks, like 50 acres, instead of all at once. The Division of Forestry says it plans to leave a buffer of at least 100 feet between the clear cuts and nearby Twin Island Lake to protect scenic views. And the division says it plans to leave at least 300 feet between the clear cuts and salmon-bearing streams. The Division of Forestry's determination says about 20% of the proposed sale area is important seasonal habitat for deer. but the State Department of Fish and Game does not have major concerns about the impact on deer and their predators as a result of the sale, according to the document. Staunton, the regional forester, says there's a plan in place to manage the regrowth of the area after the logging.
And one of those ways of doing that would be through pre-commercial thinning in the future.
That's where timber crews go through a previously clear-cut site and rip out some of the regrowth in an effort to ensure the trees don't grow too close to one another. It's an effort to make sure future trees grow big enough to be commercially viable. The state says thinning would also increase the amount of food available for deer as more light reaches the forest floor. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
The Division of Forestry is accepting public comments on the proposed sale through September 26th. Comments can be sent to Staunton at greg.staunton@alaska.gov or by mail to the Alaska Division of Forestry. A decision is expected soon after that deadline. The State Department of Environmental Conservation is recommending residents of more than a dozen communities boil water for drinking, cooking, and cleaning as a precaution following the huge storm that hit western Alaska last weekend. In the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta area, those communities are Chivak, Kungingangak, Koigilinguk, Nunam Ikwa, and Scammon Bay. In the Seward Peninsula area, there are notices for Buckland, Elim, Gullibin, Koyuk, Teller, and Unalakleet. Residents of Platinum, St. George, Diomede, and Gamble are also advised to boil water. Water should be boiled for 2 minutes before use. In a public health presentation today, Gene Wiseman, the section chief of the Rural and Community Health Systems for the state, said that he had not heard of any storm impacts on sewage systems. Residents of Shaktulik are back in their homes after many evacuated to the school when the remnants of Typhoon Murbach hit western Alaska over the weekend. The storm washed away the berm, that's the man-made embankment that protects the village from the sea. KTOO's Claire Strimple reports.
There's a lot of cleanup to do. Logs from the berm are scattered around Shaktulik. Agnes Tukuk, a Shaktulik council member and the school secretary, says people are still assessing damage to their homes and properties. But kids are back in school.
We have everyone here. We're right now just trying to be there for our children, getting them back, you know, into what we are trying to say normal, I guess, after what we experienced.
She says her generation built the berm. That's after elders saw how much land was lost due to erosion. Children in Shaktulik now have always known the protection of the berm. She says it was a symbol of their security. One student asked, "What are we going to do now?" Tukuk said if the next storm comes before the village can rebuild the berm, the community could get wiped out.
My understanding is that our organizations don't have any funding to rebuild right now. We need financial assistance ASAP. Our lives are at stake.
Mayor Lars Sukiak says Shaktulik is pressed for time. He expects another storm in November. He said planes can land at the local airstrip, but there's hardly any air traffic, so grocery store shelves are looking a little bare. Sukiak is also concerned about erosion from the storm. The village sits on a narrow spit of land between the Norton Sound and the Shaktulik River. If the ocean breaches the river, it could pollute it with salt water.
The risk of losing the freshwater source and Shaktulik becoming an island.
Logs washed into the community. But local councilman Eugene Asiksik says the berm kept water out of homes.
My ankles didn't even get wet, and I didn't even have my high heels on.
He and his family sheltered briefly at the school, but he said the village was prepared. They've seen big storms before and had systems in place.
The electrical system, you know, held up. The only thing we did was disconnect the electrical wire to our winter water pumping station, which was a good thing. And there was a lot of preparation.
He says they likely have enough water for the remainder of the month. By then, he's hoping the village will be able to pump water normally for winter. Most boats weathered the storm. Asiksik says one sank in place. Governor Mike Dunleavy is expected to be in Shaktulik this week to survey the damage. Reporting from Juneau, I'm Claire Strimple.
One of Alaska's main ferries won't be running this winter after all. The Columbia was going to be used on the mainline route, running through the inner channels of Southeast from Bellingham, Washington, and Prince Rupert, British Columbia, up to Yakutat. But the State Department of Transportation has decided to keep the 418-foot ferry sidelined. Sam Dapsevich is a DOT spokesperson.
Columbia has been out of service for a few years, and we've got it just about ready to bring back into service, but we feel it would be a better backup ship than being the primary vessel out there at this time.
The nearly 50-year-old ferry has been tied up since 2019 to save money. Now the state plans to use the Kennecott and Matanuska throughout the winter and use the Columbia as a backup ship. The Kennecott will run through mid-January and the Matanuska from late January on. There'll be a two-week gap of no service in between. This also means the Kennecott won't run cross-Gulf service in the winter months, says Dapsbich, but it could return in May. The state also decided to go back to the flat rates for now after 2 years of dynamic pricing. Dapsbich says customers didn't like the ferry prices changing, and dynamic pricing didn't work well with short staffing, which is an international problem.
Right now, with our crewing situation, we're not always able to live up to our schedule. And when that happens, we end up having to cancel people's plans. Potentially, they have to make last-minute changes, and because of dynamic pricing, they may end up paying more, and we don't feel that's right.
He says there's a recruitment program in place that should be filling vacant positions soon. You can find a link to the winter ferry schedule at dot.alaska.gov. And finally, Ketchikan High School was recently chosen as the only high school in Alaska with the rights to perform the Broadway version of the Disney musical Frozen. Students in the high school's drama club are looking forward to putting on the show next fall. And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Wednesday, September 21st, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.